الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه أجمعين. أما بعد، I think was it the signs of a qualified sheikh is next. A sheikh is one who has full knowledge and experience of spiritual ailments, أمراض باطنة. How do they get that? Because they've studied them and they've had the training about them with their own sheikh, right? And attributes, he also understands the attributes of vice and virtue. Because people are going to come with those kind of questions. I'm struggling with this. They should be able to give them some kind of you know, remedy or some kind of solution. I mean, it's up to the murid to follow that through, and how diligently they follow it through. Most murids are looking for easy, right? And sometimes what happens is that there's an inspiration that goes with it sometimes, especially when it's fresh. There's an inspiration, and that helps a lot, but that's not sustainable unless you really work hard on it yourself. At the end of the day, the sheikh can be anybody, but if you're not a committed murid, nothing's going to happen. At the same time, if you're a committed murid, you'll get so far, but if you don't have the sheikh to direct you completely, then you're going to have an issue as well. So I think that's what he's referring to. He should further be able to distinguish between their similarities. Similarity between two different types, you have to be nuanced. In, oh, this is looks the same, but this is probably because of this, and this is probably because of that. He should further be able to distinguish, and he must have perfect ability in devising plans and prescriptions for the acquisition of the attributes of virtue and the elimination of the attributes of vice. He has to be aware of the progress and retrogress of these attributes. He must be well versed in the hazards of the lower self and shaitan, the intuitive perceptions and feelings as well, pertaining to the angels and the divine being. So for example, the other day somebody called and he said that, especially if I do dhikr or something, I start seeing certain colors. Or sometimes if I'm deeply thinking about something, I end up seeing some vision of different colors and things. So he went to a sheikh and he said that you've got psychosis. I was like, please, you don't have psychosis. I go, is it fear, frightful? Do you do crazy things? And no, it just gives me a kind of a, it's either makes me feel good, so it's not psychosis at all. Not that you should base anything on there necessarily, but it's definitely not psychosis. And I don't think it's from the shaitan. It's not making you do anything wrong. It just probably tapped into a certain wavelength where these things are being engendered and you can see them. It doesn't open for everybody. Colors don't open for everybody. There's just some people, they say, for example, that if you do muraqabah on certain lata'if, right? So if you do muraqabah on latifatul qalb, which is on the heart one, it could represent itself in a vision of a certain color. Because a certain effect of the body is happening psychologically and spiritually. You're tapping into a certain spiritual wavelength that your eyes are generally filtered, doesn't allow you to see it. Whereas that one allows you to see it. Not that you're going to get anything necessarily great because of it if you don't do anything with it. I've been told about certain families, Sayyid families, that they're, mashallah, just very ripe and they kindle very easily with dhikr. Right? So one sheikh was telling me about some murids who are Sayyids in Peshawar. And he said, they're just amazing. They do a bit of dhikr and they just get kindled. In the sense that, mashallah, unka dil chal padta hai. Like, you know, they just find it much easier, whereas other people just have kathafa. So they've got this thick barrier inside that just takes longer to get rid of, right? At the end of the day, what you have to realize is that, and this is what you have to think, this is the adab of tasawwuf, is that while Allah is the provider, the reason you're focusing on a sheikh is that Allah is using that sheikh as a conduit to provide you. So the idea, I mean the technical idea, is that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's light is passing through to the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam's heart, through the mashayikh and down, through your sheikh and to yourself. So that's kind of the idea. That's why some Naqshbandis came up with this concept of tasawwurus, tasawwur al-shaykh. All right. And what that basically means is that initially when you sit and do muraqabah, you need to focus on your shaykh, not Allah. Right? Which sounds highly controversial. But what they're saying is that this is just the wasila, that you focus on your shaykh because you can see your shaykh. You know what he looks like. There's something to imagine and visualize, right? What he looks like and so on. Right, that you just imagine your shaykh watching you and you need to be careful and, and then eventually you switch that with Allah because you learn to focus with somebody that's imminent and what you can see to something that you cannot see. Because if you try to focus on Allah, it's difficult. But we generally don't tell people to focus on Allah. So we don't do that, right? Saying that we're not going to do the tasawwur shaykh is controversial. But I can see how it's acceptable, right? How it could be acceptable as long as you do it properly. But I can also see how it's controversial. So what they say instead of that, what you should think and do is when you're sitting with your shaykh, then you have to imagine that your heart is connected to your shaykh's heart. So you do what they call rabitatul qalb. So you're connecting your heart to the heart and you're assuming that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala's rahmah, when it comes down, it's coming through the mashaykh and your shaykh's got an outpouring of it. And from that, the faith is coming into your heart when you're in with your shaykh. Some people can do it even when they're not with their shaykh. In fact, then the reverse is tawajjuh, or the shaykh has to provide tawajjuh. There's a certain way of doing that. They don't reveal that unless you become a shaykh generally, right? Because people can use it in the wrong way and just sometimes affect people. So if al-aynu haqqun, if the ayn is haqq, then why can't positive ayn be haqq as well if negative ayn is haqq, right? They say that unki ek nazar ne usko Fudayl ibn Iyad bana diya. Like ek nazar padi, and like one glance of his just turned it. Uska kaya uski kaya palat gayi. These are these various idioms that they use, right? Allah. So that's he's saying that he must be able to distinguish these various intuitive and extrasensory feelings and perceptions. You need to be able to distinguish between whether somebody's got some jadu on him or somebody's got some serious mashallah, barakah and faith, on what they're seeing. For example, one of the guys in my room in Darulum when we were probably about 14 years old, he was quite a joshila person, right? Quite an animated kind of individual. He decided that I'm going to go and do, we used to go into the zikr room and you're told that you're not allowed to do that zikr. La ilaha illallah, unless you get ijazah for it, right? Because it's given to you and then you have to adjust it because it's like medicine, it could work out. For example, the people say through experience that if you read La ilaha illa anta subhanaka inni kuntu min al-zalimeen multiple times, it's going to be very hot for you. Has a very heating effect. And your body might not be able, because everybody's different. Whereas Durush Sharif, you can do in abundance and it will have, it won't affect the temper. It's a neutral state. It's kind of really interesting that these things have different ta'thir and effects and efficacies. So this guy started doing La ilaha illallah in a it was a weekend. Classes were empty and dark, winter, like 4 o'clock or whatever, after Maghrib. And he said, I just started seeing things. Right, so sometimes you do see things, sometimes you can have a hal when you do dhikr, sometimes you can fall into a state where you lose yourself because you've kind of your spirit has ascended, your ruh has ascended to mala'ul a'la, al mala'ul a'la, or to the what they call a malakut or jabarut, or to the basically higher realms. So you lose yourself, so you're not aware of what's going on around you. You don't want that state though. That's not something you need to be looking for. Because that's the state of, that could become the state of jadhb. That's when a person becomes majzoob. When if they can't help themselves, then of course if they do say anything crazy or whatever, they sometimes are known to say crazy things, they're ma'zool anyway, right? But that's not considered to be praiseworthy state to reach or something that you need to try to acquire. Our purpose is that you carry on living in the world and you be connected to Allah and you multitasking in that regard. Like it becomes a second nature, it becomes like your breath. That's the purpose of it. So sheikhs need to be able to understand the difference between what people are feeling. There's one woman who called me, a family called me first, that please talk to her, she's going to call you. She's married this guy. And she said that he's a wali of Allah, but we've gotten into drugs and porn and everything. But it just feels so good when you're with him. He's a wali of Allah. I know he's a wali of Allah. I go, please, like, just get it. You can't be a wali of Allah and persist on these things. If it was a one-off, chalo theek hai, maybe possible. But if you are saying that, it's just totally deluded, because I don't know, maybe it was, there have been some crazy Sufis or weird people in the past that have used hashish and other things to get themselves going. There's also a drug that the ISIS use frequently. There's a pill. I forget what it's called. Prince Ghazi's mentioned it in his book on, you know, life. And it just fires you up. And you don't see reality. You get really excited and you can just go in and do a mission. So there's lots of things like that. These are artificial means, obviously. But you also don't want yourself to fall into that, because that's not something you should be looking for. That's why in a gathering, we get some people are like, Allah! They say, no, Naqshband is like, it's called Bandrako. Should all be happening inside? You shouldn't be revealing to the world, because then you get lots of issues with that. Some people they just can't handle it, so they just go into a trance, almost. They go into a hal, they call it. So it is therefore that a sheikh of the path to be one who is qualified in the knowledge of and a mujtahid in this field. I mean, he's asking for a lot, by the way. He's asking for some mujtahid. And great if you could. And possess natural ability and internal propensity in it. Mullah Tahir Tanwi Sahib was always very, very nuanced, okay? If he has acquired the path by a mere self-study of books on tasawwuf or by listening to others, he will destroy the seeker whom he is guiding. Because it's all theory. He's never seen it practiced. He's never experienced it. So it's all theory. All right? Yeah, Captagon pill. Inayat, mashallah. Because he will not be... I mean, how does it work? I mean, how does it make you feel? I mean, does it really make you, like, really feel... You've not tried it yet. Because he will not be in a position to correctly diagnose the various states of the seeker. If you look at books like Tarbiyat al-Salik, Al-Basair of Hakim al-Umma, Mawlana Shabri Tanwi, and there's other books like, if you look at the Maktubat of Sheikh Zakaria, you'll see that they'll send a letter in about, or ask a question, that this is my issue. And then they respond. And it's quite amazing the way they do this hikmah, this response of these spiritual ailments, right? Sheikh Ibn Arabi, may Allah have mercy on him, briefly lists the signs of a complete and qualified sheikh, a sheikh kamil, as three. His deen, religion, resembles the deens of the messenger. Deen of the messengers. MashaAllah, aisa koi milega to bahut acha hai. Upon him, peace. He prescribes cures as physicians. He's got the ability to, he has a prescription pad, and he can, you know, in his own way, you know. And his management and control is that of kings. The exposition of the above points is as follows. Is given 10 points. We can. Right? Number one, he should possess the necessary knowledge of the deen, which he must have acquired either by formal pursuit of such knowledge or from remaining in the company of firmly grounded scholars. You don't have to be a formal alim, but you better know your fardul ayn and you better know your halal and haram. Okay? Like Haji Imdadullah wasn't a formal alim, and there's others as well. Number two, he must be a deputy Khalifa of a qualified sheikh and attached to a legitimate order. Unfortunately, there are people who want to become sheikhs before their time. They've not been given khilafat by anybody. And like there was one, honestly, I was like, we provide spiritual guidance and tarbiyah and so on. So somebody took them up on that. Who do you have khilafat from? He didn't. So then he had to change it. He says there's some people who want to become a sheikh and a mufti and a judge and a muhaddith and so on altogether.
So would it be wrong to say, just as a general, like a maulana, whose job is to be imam or whatever his role, to say
he can give basic spiritual guidance,
but not to advertise it as...
No. He can give spiritual guidance, but he can't give this formalized tariq guidance, because that has to be done with knowledge. So you could give people, like, take you could say, everybody can say paracetamol, say tasmikaro, that's paracetamol. Everybody knows that. Cream E45, all right? You could even say that, okay, I see that you probably got an infection, take some antibiotics. Yeah, that much you could say. Anybody can say that. It's not like you can't tell anybody. Quran paro, right? You know, do this much dhikr, do la ilaha illallah, the sunnah adhkar, no problem. When it gets to complicated things, that's when it becomes an issue. But even then, if somebody has a complication that's come to you and he consults somebody accomplished and they give, then that's fine. As long as you're not claiming anything. He should be upright and pious, refraining from major sins and from continuously committing minor sins as well. He must have derived spiritual benefit by remaining in the company of a sheikh for an adequate period of time. Such companionship can either come through physically being in the sheikh's presence or through correspondence. You're in constant touch. All right. The people of knowledge and understanding hold him in high esteem and resort to him in matters. So he can't just be somebody self-claiming all of these things. And sometimes the sheikh dies and you've got claiming of khilafah. Who's going to challenge you? Sheikh didn't leave a list, didn't tell anybody else. Could happen, right? Or he did have you as a khalifa, but then you're messed up afterwards. There's so many, they mess up afterwards. Right? So that, I think, consider this is something I tell everybody. The people of knowledge, and ulama, and understanding must hold him in decent esteem and resort to him in matters. Maybe not that, but at least hold him in respect. And like, acha kaam kar. Number 6, his companionship increases one's desire in you for the hereafter and divine love, and decreases one's love for the world. The majority of his disciples are followers of the Sharia. You see that effect, that people around him are generally followers of the Sharia. Their condition conforming to the demands of the Sharia, for the most part. You know, initially somebody might not have a beard or whatever, and then eventually, mashallah, on kisad reke. Otherwise, if you're constantly got some fusak around you and you're the big sheikh, then that just tells you where you are, that they've affected you. And number 8, he's without greed and desire for worldly gain and benefits. Number 9, he engages in remembrance and devotion himself. Aapko masjid bhej diya, main Makkah mein jaake padhunga. Madina Sharif mein padhunga. Hum aapke saath chalenge. नहीं नहीं उस गाड़ी में जगह नहीं होती वो मैं अकेला ही कर सकता हूँ करामत. He doesn't pray, doesn't do the zikr. He does not, number 10, he does not leave his disciples unfettered, but reprimands them when the need arises and treats everyone in accordance with their respective abilities. So he's not somebody to just please the people. He knows how to do it. The one in whom these attributes exist is worthy of being a sheikh, and he should be considered a wonderful alchemy, meaning a wonderful solution for you. His companionship and service are in fact priceless treasures. Once these attributes and qualities are found in a sheikh, one should not be concerned about miracles and unveilings. It is not necessary that these states exist in a qualified sheikh, meaning kashf and karamat, nor is it necessary that he be one who does not earn his livelihood. Like, your sheikh doesn't have to be some poor wali of Allah who just, mashallah, just pulls money out under his prayer mat. He could be a working class guy. And it's amazing how one big alim has told me about somebody he's connected to after Hazrat, who's a working guy. He goes, you'd never expect him to be, but he is of a very high caliber. That's a bit of a different. But anyway, that is Sheikh Kamil. Problem is that you're hardly going to find somebody who fits all of those things nowadays. So then you just basically get the best you can. Right? مَا لَا يُدْرَكُ كُلُّهُ لَا يُتْرَكُ كُلُّهُ. That's what it is. Okay. So we end there.
The point of a lecture is to encourage people to act, to get further, an inspiration, an encouragement, persuasion. The next step is to actually start learning seriously, to read books, to take on a subject of Islam and to understand all the subjects of Islam, at least at their basic level, so that we can become more aware of what our deen wants from us. And that's why we started Rayyan courses, so that you can actually take organized lectures on demand whenever you have free time, especially, for example, the Islamic Essentials course that we have on there, the Islamic Essentials Certificate, which you take 20 short modules. And at the end of that, inshallah, you will have gotten the basics of most of the most important topics in Islam, and you'll feel a lot more confident. You don't have to leave lectures behind. You can continue to leave, to listen to lectures, but you need to have this more sustained study as well. Jazakallah khairan. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.